Sichas of Parsha Savri is in Chelek Beis, Volume 2 of Lukutei Sichas. In the Parsha of Tavei, we are told about the mitzvah of bringing Bikurim. Bikurim means the first fruits, that the best fruits that the land of Israel produces, in a time when the land of Israel was a land flowing with milk and honey. So from the fruits of the year, the first fruits of the year, before you take any fruit for yourself, before you bring any to your house, you first fill up a basket of these best first fruits and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. And that was in order to thank God for the blessing that God gave to the land and the fruits of the land. And this, instead of being a sacrifice that is burnt on the altar in the Beis HaMikdash, it is brought to the Beis HaMikdash but given to the Kohen, and the Kohen eats it and uses it. From this we learn two things. Number one, that the harvest, the fruits of the land that grow as a result of our efforts, a person has to plow and he has to plant and he has to take care. So he puts in a lot of work and a lot of sweat to produce these fruits. So it's possible that a person should argue that although he understands that when the first fruits are produced, there should be some of it given to the Kohen, given to holiness, as an expression of gratitude for God's blessings. But does it have to be the best fruits? Does it have to be the first fruits? After all, this is the result of my work and my efforts. So this complaint or this argument can only exist if a person thinks that the fruits came as a result of his efforts. Of course, with help from above, but as a result of his efforts. And this, of course, is not correct. And every Jew has the simple, unadorned emunah and belief that God runs the world, and that if there's fruits that grow in our fields, it's nasata li Hashem, God gave it to me. Not only that God helped me and blessed my efforts, but that God actually gave it to me because it comes from God. So when a person thinks about this, even just briefly, he realizes that the complaint is really unfounded, and that it makes perfect sense that the first fruits and the best fruits should be taken off to the Beis HaMikdash and given to holiness and set aside for the Kohen. The only challenge is that this awareness that we have, the simple unadorned emunah, should be active and influence our daily behavior on a regular basis. The second thing we learn from this mitzvah is that we don't burn the first fruits, the bikurim, we don't burn it on the altar in order to raise it up to holiness. We give it to the Kohen, and the Kohen actually enjoys the fruits, eats it and enjoys it. This tells us that if a person raises himself to the level of a Kohen, then he can actually enjoy the physical fruits and in doing so be fulfilling a mitzvah and be doing something holy. And that burning a sacrifice on the altar is not the only way in which we elevate a physical object. It is not the only way of producing holiness. With a proper preparation, first through davening and through learning, then we can even eat in a holy fashion. We can do business in a holy fashion. All of it assuming that we make the right preparation. And so even outside of Israel, and even in the time of Golos, we have the concept, the idea of Bikurim, in effect, in a spiritual level. And that is to elevate the physical activities, like eating and working and so on, by recognizing that in all of it, there is the Nasata Li Hashem, there's the gift from God, and by saying with our whole heart and with full intention, Baruch Hashem, concerning all of these things. That with what we have is a result of Baruch Hashem, it's because Nasata Li Hashem, that God gave it to us. And that awareness alone starts to elevate and to make holy these objects, the food that we eat, and the things that we work with, and our job, and so on. This is the right preparation to bring about the coming of Mashiach, where the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and then we will be able to bring the Bikurim in the literal, in the actual physical mitzvah, which when it was brought in the Beis HaMikdash, it was concluded with a blessing and with a prayer that in the year to come, we should once again be able to come and bring Bikurim with joy and with gladness of heart. Before Rosh Hashanah, and also before Shavuos, we read a portion in the Torah that speaks about the suffering of the Jewish people. This is called the Teichacha, where the Torah tells us in very grim fashion the results of sin and the suffering that comes as a result of sin. Before Shavuos we read it in Parshas Bechukesai, and before Rosh Hashanah we read it in Parshas Tovi. But we don't go directly from the reading of the Teichacha into Yom Tov. There is a break between the Teichacha and the Yom Tov where we read other parshas. Before Shavuos, we read parshas Bamidbar, sometimes also parshas Nosei, and before Rosh Hashanah, we read parshas Nitzavim and sometimes parshas Vayelech, in order to make a break between the Teichacha and the Yom Tov. The reason for this is because the Teichacha is not merely a description of punishment and suffering, but rather it is a description of the cleansing of the vessel, so to speak. And that's why before you come into a Yom Tov, before the Yom Tov gives you its blessings, you have to clean the vessel into which the blessings will be given and in which the blessings will be contained. Just as before you put a precious object into a box, into a container, you first make sure that the container is clean. The more precious the object, the more you're concerned for the cleanliness of its container. And so it is also in the spiritual. And that's why before the revelations of godliness, the closeness of godliness, of the giving of the Torah, which is Shavuos, and before we get to the godliness that is revealed on Rosh Hashanah, because every Rosh Hashanah a new godliness, a new light comes into the world that had never been there before, not even in the time that the Beis HaMikdash stood. So before we receive these great revelations, we first want to make sure that the keli, the receptacle, is pure and clean. Which means that notwithstanding the fact that for a short time this suffering is painful, and particularly for a princess or a prince who is an only child, since every Jew is an only child to God, so every princess, every prince is so sensitive that the slightest suffering is already unbearable, to the point where we have to make a break between the description of the suffering and the Yom Tov. Yet, our Father in Heaven, who is compassionate and kind, finds it appropriate and worthwhile, justified, to go through this moment of discomfort in order to receive the blessing that follows. The difference between the Teichacha and Parshas Bechukesai, which we read before Shavuos, and the Teichacha of Parshas Tovei, which we read before Rosh Hashanah, is that in the Parsha of Bechukesai, the Torah enumerates 49 curses, 49 degrees of suffering. Whereas in Parshas Tovei, which we read before Rosh Hashanah, the Torah enumerates 98 forms of suffering. double portion, twice as much as in Parshas B'chukeisai. From this we can understand how much greater the revelations of Rosh Hashanah are even than the revelations of Shavuos. To the degree where the revelations of Rosh Hashanah demand twice the preparation, twice the cleanliness that Shavuos demands. The revelation of Shavuos comes from above. Milmaila lamata, from above downwards. As the Gemara says concerning the giving of the Torah, that at the giving of the Torah, every Jew became a convert. And a convert is as a newborn child. So it didn't start with us, it started from above, from Milmaila lamata, from above downward. But the revelations of Tishrei, that's primarily tshuva. And tshuva is a return, a response on the part of the human being, and that is from below upwards. And that's also why the month of Tishrei, the name of Tishrei, is spelled Tav Shin Resh, and then a Yud. Tav Shin Resh is backwards, the alphabet backwards. So it's returning, it's going, working your way up from the last letter back towards the first letter. And that's why in the preparation for Shavuos, which is a time, which are the months of preparation before Shavuos, are Nisan and Iyar and a few days of Sivan. Those represent the month of the Aveda of the Tzaddik, Dei Di Li V'Ani Lei, where God reaches down, Milmaila Lamata, God reaches to us and we respond to Him. But the preparation for Rosh Hashanah is the month of Elul. And that is the level of Ba'alei Tshuva, Anila Deidi, and then Deidi Li. I first reach out to my beloved, to God, and then God responds to that. So this the revelation that comes from a reaction, from a response, is much greater than the revelation that is given directly from above. In the same way that the Baal Tshuva is greater than the Tzaddik. We find this also with the Luchos, with the tablets of the Ten Commandments. The first set of tablets didn't last very long. They were broken by Moshe when he came down off the mountain. But the second set of Luchos, which were given not on Shavuos, but on the day after Yom Kippur, in the month of Tishrei, these were much higher than the first luchos, and that's why they lasted. And in fact, the expression there is that the second luchos were kiflayim l'tushia; they were twice as much or twice as great as the first set, which corresponds to the fact that Rosh Hashanah we have to have twice the preparation as the preparation for Shavuos. The same is true also with Golos in general. That the source of the Golos is the sin of the ego, the making of the golden calf, where it says that we were punished twice, doubly punished. The same is also with the result of the sin, with the Golos. The Golos also is a double dark Golos, and in response to that, we have the consolation of Nachamu, Nachamu, that God consoles us doubly with the Geula, B'meheda B'yameinu. Concerning the Teichacha, concerning suffering, we are told that there are two expressions in that the sages use to reveal to us, to teach us, that even that which looks negative, which looks bad, is really for the good. The two expressions are, number one, Kol Da'avid Rachmona L'Tav Avid, all that God does, He does for the good. And that's said in Aramaic, not in Hebrew, not in Lashon Kodesh. And the second expression is Gam Zu L'Tayva, this too is for the good. And that is said in the Holy Tongue in Lashon HaKodesh. The difference is that the Holy Tongue, Lashon HaKodesh, means that the holiness is revealed, whereas Aramaic is a translation, an alternative language, and And in a translation, the message is the same, but it is not as clear, it's not as sharp. We'll understand the difference between these two expressions by the stories that the Gemara gives to describe the events that happened that brought out the expressions and their statements. The incident that the Gemara tells us about concerning the expression called Ovid Rahman Alutav Ovid is the story of Rabbi Akiva, who was traveling and he had with him a candle, a donkey, and a rooster. And what happened was that he came to a certain city and he asked for lodging for the night, but they were very stingy, wicked people, and they refused him lodging. And so he had to spend the night out in the fields. During the night, a wind came and blew out the candle. Then an animal came and attacked his rooster. And then the donkey also was attacked and killed. So he needed his donkey in order to travel. He needed his rooster to wake him up in time for Tikkun Chatzos. And he needed the candle to study by. And he lost them all. But in each case, when he lost the candle, when he lost the rooster, and when he lost the donkey, his response to each of these events was, "Kol mad oved rachmono letav oved." In the morning, he found out that during the night, a band of robbers had attacked the city and had killed everyone there. And had he been there, he would have been a victim as well. And what's more, had he been burning his candle, they would have found him, they would have noticed him, or had his rooster or donkey made any noise, it would have given him away, and he too would have become victim to this band of robbers. And so it turns out that in fact, everything that God did was for the good. Then there's another incident, another story, that describes the expression that created the expression Gamzu L'Teva. And that was, in the times of the Gemara, there was a Tana named Nochem Ish Gamzu. The name Ish Gamzu, he was given that title because of his oft expressed reaction to negative news, where he would say Gamzu L'Teva. He was once sent to the king of Rome, and he was given precious stones to take along as a gift to the king, and then his mission was to prevail on the king to improve conditions for the Jews. During his travels, he was staying at an inn, and he hid the box with the precious stones. He dug a little hole and hid it in the ground. Since he was sent as a shliach from a Jewish community, and this money was from the Jewish community, he was very careful that he shouldn't lose it, and he was hopeful that God will help him fulfill his mission. When he came to the king of Rome, and they opened up the box, they found that instead of being filled with diamonds, it had been filled with sand. Because during the night, while he was at the innkeeper had stolen the diamonds and had replaced it with sand. So at first, the king was very angry, and he wanted to punish him, a punishment befitting one who commits treason. But God sent Eliyahu HaNavi in the form of one of the advisors of the king, and he said to the king, maybe this sand is like the sand that Avraham used when Avraham went to war against the four kings, where he threw sand at them and every grain of sand miraculously turned into an arrow or into a spear. At this time, the king of Rome was of course at war with other nations, and they sent the sand immediately to be tested, and it turned out that the sand was in fact miraculous, And as a result, the king of Rome fulfilled Ibnacham Ish Gamzu's requests completely. And so it turned out again that this disaster, or the seeming disaster, was Gamzu Lateva. This too was for the good. Now the difference between these two illustrations is that in Rabbi Akiva's case, where he said everything God does is for the good, in his case, things happened that really we don't see as good. The death of the rooster and of the donkey and the loss of the light is not a good thing. It's not good to be left in the dark. It's not good to lose your animal or to have the animals die. It's that the result was good. Through these things, which basically are not so very good, but compared to the goodness that resulted from it, the fact that it saved Rabbi Akiva's life, then these small unpleasantries become insignificant and all ends up being for the good. In the case of Nocham Ish Gamzu, nothing negative happened at all. It only seemed to be negative for the moment. But in truth, had he brought the original gift, the precious stones, it would have really meant very little to the king of Rome, who had all the precious stones he could possibly use. It was a conventional gift, at best. Whereas when it turned into sand, and the sand was miraculous sand, this was a much greater gift, a much more significant gift, a much more appreciated gift. And as a result, the king agreed to everything Ibnacham asked, far more than if he had brought him the diamonds or the stones. So the replacing of the stones with sand was not a negative thing at all. And it was very clear that Gamzu Lateva, this is for the good. Not that this is bad, but it produces good. Not that this is a negative event, but it's justified because of the greater good that comes as a result. But this too, this itself, is for the good. Only at a moment when a person is short-sighted and can't see the outcome or doesn't yet know the outcome, for the moment it looks like it was bad to have the stones replaced with sand. Later we find out that it itself was a good thing. With Rabbi Akiva's case, it's not just that it appeared to be bad. The death of the animals is bad, but it wanes to insignificance compared to the greater good that resulted from it. And that is the difference between Aramaic, an expression said in the Aramaic language, versus an expression said in the clear, holy tongue of the Torah. It's significant that Ibnacham Ish Gamzu was the teacher of Rabbi Akiva. He was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe, which means that Rabbi Akiva was a generation later after Nocham Ish Gamzu. So in the generation of Rabbi Akiva, the Golus had gotten darker, the world had gotten darker, there was another generation of Golus, and with each generation the Golus becomes darker and darker, and that's why, even though what was happening in Rabbi Akiva was good, but in the physical it was not as revealed, it was not as obvious as it could have been. As it was in the generation before Rabbi Akiva, in the time of his Rebbe, Nocham Ish Gamzu, who was closer to the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and then the goodness that comes from heaven is much more revealed and much more obvious. Now, at the end of the Golus, when we are coming to the time when the sun will come out in its full strength, which means that godliness will be revealed without concealments, without disguises, a time when godliness will be revealed to a degree that we will be able to say, Zeh Hashem kivinu lo, this is God for whom we have longed. At the end of the Golus, we will be able to say we have longed for God, but we will be able to point and say, Zeh Hashem, this is the God for whom we have longed, because to point to something and say this, you have to be able to see it clearly. Zeh refers or describes something that is visible and clear, so that you can point to it with your finger and say, this is it. And so we come to that time when we're beginning to see in all events not only that it might in the end lead to something good, that there's a silver lining to every cloud, but that the cloud itself is good. Gamzu, this itself is l'teva, is good.